Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going
to
find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs in the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stocks.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hi, everybody, and welcome again. This is Peter Schiff. I am president of Euro Pacific Capital, and I am the host of the show Wall Street Unspun. I will be with you for the next hour, taking your calls live. We are broadcasting on my website at www.europac.net and also on shortwave radio. Shortwave radio, the frequency is 5.07 megahertz. And we're doing this live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Also, you can catch a rebroadcast on the shortwave Saturday evenings, 11:30 Eastern Time, 8:30 Pacific in the evening on frequency 9.32 megahertz. Or as always, hopefully we will get this broadcast as soon as possible up on the website where you can listen to it at your leisure at www.europac.net. And remember, the number to call, I want to try to get as many calls as possible. Remember, last week we had quite a few calls, and it made for a very, very entertaining hour. Anyway, give me a call. The number for your questions or comments is 888-678-9597. That's 888-678-9597. That's the number for your calls. The lines are free. I have no callers on hold. Now's the time to call to get positioned. Anyway, again, you know, looking at the precious metals market, I've been talking about that market, and I still think the action looks positive. Silver continues to look strong relative to gold, and just absolutely. Some of the gold stocks have been very strong. We've seen some strength. I mean, some stocks like Kinross has moved up to the 52-week high. It's had a huge move up in the last few days. Barrick Gold trading extremely well, making a new high for the last month or two. Things are picking up. You know, the dollar also has looked weak. It made new multi-month lows the other day, and then there were some weak economic data that came out of Germany, and so that put a bid into the dollar and kind of stopped the decline. But it's still, we've been trading, below 85 on the dollar index, and it just looks very, very weak. New Zealand dollar, again, this week made another new 52-week high. The Australian dollar and New Zealand dollar continue to look strong. The Canadian dollar trading very, very well, looking very strong. British pound, I hit a new, 15 or 16-year high recently. That currency looks very, very strong. And as I said, once we really get the dollar to break below 80 on this dollar index, that's it. I think it's all over. And so anybody who's interested in getting more money out of U.S. dollars, you don't want to wait for them to open up the floodgates. You want to get out while the market is still orderly, while there's still some hope for the dollar. I think that hope is misguided or misplaced, but nevertheless it exists. And that hope is what's holding it up and what's giving us the ability to enable our clients to sell their dollars in favor of stronger currencies and acquiring non-dollar assets. So anybody who has started doing that or hasn't done that at all, don't wait any longer. I mean, give us a call. Again, it's 800-727-7922. That's the main number in Darien, Connecticut, 800-727-7922. I know there are brokers in the office. I just got off the phone with one of them. So they're there to take your calls. Today, I mean, I guess the biggest news announcement today was the existing home sales, which plunged by, about 4.5%, which was, they were looking for a decline of about 1%. And the number of homes on the market now is at a new high, or the highest it's been since like 1995 or something. You know, more than a 10-year high in the inventory of unsold homes. And, you know, those inventories are just going to keep on building. I mean, this is just the beginning. I mean, first of all, we know there's a lot of homes under construction right now by builders and speculators who are building these properties. And, you know, they're not completed yet, so they're not on the market. So these new homes are going to continue to be added to the supply. In addition, you know, there's not a lot of houses selling. So there's not a lot of houses coming off the market. And in addition, I think more and more people are going to be listing their properties. You know, I don't know if I gave this example before on the air, but, you know, I'm renting an apartment here, and across the street from me, when I moved in a few months ago, there was a house for sale on this block. And maybe there's, I don't know, 15 or 20 houses on the block. I don't even know. Maybe there's not even that many. Maybe there's only 10 on this one block. I mean, now there are four houses up for sale on the block. I mean, more and more people are listing their houses. And this is going to happen. You know, when real estate prices were rising, very few people wanted to sell. I mean, even though their houses were very expensive and clearly overvalued and represented a great deal of purchasing power, there was no real hurry to sell because the prices just kept on rising. I mean, nobody wanted to get off the gravy train. No one wanted to kill the goose that laid all the golden eggs. But once, you know, people start driving home and they start seeing a lot of for sale signs and they get worried that, well, maybe the prices are going to fall. They're not going to go up anymore. We'll reach the top. You know, they pop a for sale sign out on their lawn. And so, you know, the number of homes for sale is just going to keep on rising and rising. And, of course, the more homes that are for sale, the less likely it is that anybody wants to buy one. Or even if someone does buy one, it doesn't really make a dent in the supply because there are so many of them. And, of course, more people are putting their houses on the market. So this is just going to continue to happen until ultimately, of course, price just caves in under that supply. I mean, right now the sellers, even though they're lowering their prices, they're not slashing their prices. And basically they're hoping to be the lottery winner. They're hoping to be the one person who gets a buyer. But at some point, sellers are not going to just, you know, want to hope they win the lottery. They're going to be more motivated. I mean, people are going to start undercutting each other and start trying to be the house that sells by being the lowest price on the block. And then once you get the realization where you've got sellers competing with one another to actually sell a house, and they start moving the prices down, that's when you're going to start to see the supply coming down. Not so much because the houses actually sell, because a lot of them won't sell. But what will happen is people will take their houses off the market. You know, it's one thing if you, you know, let's say you bought a house for $200,000 and now it's worth $700,000 and you think it's worth $700,000 and you're willing to sell for $700,000. But if all of a sudden the houses are selling for $200,000 or $250,000, you might not, you know, you might take your house. I mean, sure, you can leave it on the market at $700,000, but I mean, that's obviously not going to be there. It's like, let's say you had an order, you know, Yahoo was at $250 and you put an order in to sell it at $255 and then the stock collapsed and now it's down at $20. I mean, is your Yahoo really still for sale? Well, I mean, you got an order up there at $255 and you might as well cancel it because it's never going back up there. You know, you might not be willing to sell it at $20. Maybe you still want to keep it. You were willing to sell it when it was around $250, but you missed your opportunity. You were too greedy. So I think that's the same thing. I mean, a lot of these houses that are for sale at $700,000, let's say, really wouldn't be for sale at $200,000. And maybe that's really all they're worth. But as long as something is valued at two or three times what it's really worth, of course it's for sale. You know, I ask people the question, you know, I say, you know, what kind of car do you have? And if someone says, oh, I've got a Ford Taurus, you know, would you sell it for $100,000? Oh, of course, in a heartbeat. All right, so your car is for sale if you can get $100,000. You know, everything is for sale at a certain price. And so, you know, basically the prices now in the real estate market are artificial. They're fantasies. They reflect a transaction that might have occurred, you know, 6 months or a year ago when everybody was stupid. You know, when the lenders were lending and the buyers were buying and nobody asked any questions and people thought trees grew to the moon and nobody wanted to sell and everybody wanted to buy, those prices don't exist anymore. And they're never going to exist again in real terms. People just don't understand that yet. But that's why there's so many houses on the market. Because if you can sell something for a lot more than it's worth, it's for sale. And this is going to keep on happening. And, of course, you know, the supply of these houses on the market is going to overwhelm the price. prices are going to start to come down. The lenders are going to get scared. You know, they're going to stop lending, or they're going to want down payments. They're going to want fully amortized loans. None of this zero down, no doc, liar's mortgages. I mean, because when lenders start worrying about getting repaid, that's when the credit standards come back. You know, and it's all going to happen. It's all happening, folks. I mean, it's happening. I mean, go back onto my website and read my commentaries over the last 2 years where I describe this situation to a T. I couldn't pinpoint the exact timing of when it was going to unravel. All I knew that it was going to, and I basically laid out how it was going to happen. I explained why there was a real estate bubble, why it was a bubble, and why it was going to explode, and how, and the dynamics, how it was going to happen. It's happened exactly the way I said it would happen. And it's interesting, you know, all the people that a year ago, you know, said, you know, we're not going to have, the market's never going to land. You know, trees are going to grow to the sky. Now they're all talking soft landing. Well, you know, these guys were wrong then when they didn't think we were going to land in the first place, and now they're wrong when they think the landing is going to be soft. In fact, you know, we're not even going to land. Some people say hard landing. I don't know if anybody saw me. I was on Bloomberg TV today, but I made this point on Bloomberg Television. We're not going to have a hard landing. We're going to have a crash landing. No, there aren't going to be any survivors. This plane is going to crash, and everybody on board is going to lose. I mean, anybody who bought real estate in the last few years, they're all going to lose. The prices are just going to implode. Now, if they bought real estate and they refinanced it and they bought some cars and some took a vacation and bought a TV, and then they walk away, you know, maybe they won't be a loser. Maybe they got a bunch of free stuff, you know. They had a good time for a while, and, you know, now it's over. But this is it, you know. And I think if anybody is listening to me and they still have a house, and they think it's worth, you know, what their neighbor sold it for 6 months ago, that ain't the case. That ain't the case. And, you know, it's still possible to sell. It's still possible. But there's only one way you're going to sell your house. Well, actually, there's two ways. One is you get lucky, right? There's a bunch of houses for sale. Somebody's going to buy one of them. And, you know, I don't. It's like, you know, as I said, it's like winning the lottery if somebody's willing to buy your house, you know. So, but if you don't want to leave it to chance, the way you sell your house is just find, look at what all the houses are selling for, and just sell your house for 20% less than the cheapest one on the market. What you've got to do is create the illusion of a bargain. And the reason I say illusion is because it's not really a bargain. You're really going to get a lot more than it's worth, even if you get 20% below what people think it's worth. Because you got to let the buyer think he's getting a deal, because otherwise he won't buy it. But the reality is, a year from now, that price is going to be impossible to get, because by then the houses on the market will be selling, will be offered for less. See, what you've got to do is make your house look attractive relative to the other houses, but realize that that price that everybody thinks is a bargain today is going to look expensive in a few months, and then you'll never be able to get that price, and then you'll have to do the same thing by dropping it 20 or 30% again. So if you still have your house, you've got a window of opportunity to sell it. You got to cut the price sharply, but realize you're still getting a tremendous amount of money. You're still getting way more than the house is worth, and way more what you're likely to be able to sell it for in a couple of years. So, and if you don't do that, you're just stuck. You're never, you know, and as long as, you know, people own houses and they don't think of them as financial assets, they don't think that they're going to retire on them. They bought them for the right reason. They just bought them because they needed a place to live, and it doesn't really matter whether it's worth $1 million or $300,000. Then don't worry about it. But if you're one of those people who looked at their house as a piggy bank, as an ATM, as a retirement plan, if you thought you were going to retire on the house, there's that one book, you know, the book, I think the title is Retiring on the House. You know, how you don't have to save for your retirement, just buy a house, you know, and then let the house save for you, and then you just sell it and you move to, you know, a cheaper neighborhood in Florida or something. That ain't going to happen. And, of course, you know, a lot of people who thought their houses were doing the saving for them are going to have a lot of catching up to do when all the home equity that they thought was going to be there is vanishing. And all of a sudden they got to start saving again. They can't spend all their money. But, you know, I mean, that's where our economy is going to be in so much trouble, our bubble economy. Because so much of the consumption is tied to the real estate market, whether it's the wealth effect, whether it's cash-out refinancing, whether it's reliance on short-term interest-only loans, which artificially suppress mortgage payments, freeing up additional cash for discretionary spending. All this stuff is coming to an end, all this stuff. And the most amazing thing to me, I believe, is that, you know, this giant bubble is about to burst right in our faces. you know, just a few years after a similar but smaller bubble burst in the stock market. And very, very few people can see it happening. And these numbers that are coming out, you know, people are actually surprised. People are being taken by surprise. Like, oh, why is this happening? Or, you know, and, oh, well, it's only temporary. It's a little bit of a lull. It's a buying opportunity. I mean, this is, you know, talk about an ostrich sticking his head in the sand. I mean, this is absolutely ridiculous. But this is going on. Anyway, I'm noticing that there are no callers on hold. So I don't know if there's a problem, if there really are callers, and I can't see that. But if you are listening to the program and you're thinking about calling, I've been told the lines are clear. So hopefully it doesn't mean that nobody's listening. It just means that nobody's calling. But the number to call, if you want to ask a question or make a comment, the number is 888-678-9597. That's 888-678-9597. And the lines are open. But anyway, enough about real estate, you know, and you know, also too during the week we got, you know, some earnings disappointments and some lowered guidance from a number of the home builders. I mean, all the ducks are lining up. I mean, this is just so obvious what's about to happen. It's just so obvious that only a Wall Street analyst or an economist could miss it. But, you know, I suppose, you know, a year or two from now, it's all going to be history, and then they'll be able to figure it out. I mean, it's just like during the dot-com boom. I mean, very few people, you know, in my profession, I mean, other than me, were out there talking about the bubble while it was still blowing up, you know, while investors still had a chance to do something about it, to protect themselves. I mean, I was out there in 98, 99, you know, even talking about this stuff. Most people didn't start talking about it until 2001, 2002, you know, after the bubble burst. I mean, it was too late for anybody to do anything with the information. You know, the same thing is happening in the real estate market. I mean, I was warning people about the dangers of buying into an overpriced market and the dangers for the economy years ago. You know, most people are not going to start talking about these dangers until next year or the year after that. Of course, by then it's way too late because the damage has been done. The people already bought your house. Or, you know. So, but it's just amazing. It's just amazing, you know, how something can be so obvious, yet so many people can be oblivious to it, and it's staring them right in the face, especially when, you know, they have the experience with the NASDAQ so fresh in their minds. You know, if we hadn't had a NASDAQ bubble and if this, the real estate bubble, was the only one, you know, it'd still be amazing to me that people missed it. But to actually go through one, you know. And again, remember when I used to talk to people who were investing in real estate or speculating in real estate, and they would say, well, you know, I don't want to buy the stock market. You know, I lost money in the stock market. Stocks are no good. You know, I'm buying real estate. You know, the mistake was, it wasn't that stocks were no good. Stocks aren't bad. I mean, just, you know, what makes a stock investment good or bad is what you pay for it. What's bad is overpaying for stocks, paying more than they're worth. So the people who lost money in the stock market didn't lose money because stocks were bad. They lost money because they were bad. They made bad decisions. They overpaid for stocks. And now when those people moved into the real estate market thinking they were going to get a better result because real estate was a better investment than stocks, they're not going to get a better result. They're going to get the same result because they're repeating the same mistakes. All they're doing is repeating the mistakes they made in the stock market in the real estate market. They overpaid for stocks. They got burned. Then they went right ahead and overpaid for real estate. And they're still going to get burned. Because the problem is not in the investments. It's in themselves. What they need to do is to take a break from themselves. They need to get educated. They need some help. But, you know, when you buy stocks, and you don't pay attention to the dividend yield, the same way people are buying real estate and not paying attention to the rental yield. But anyway, let me take a quick break, and we'll talk about something else, unless you have a question or comment. The lines are still open. I can't believe there hasn't been one call. 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Let's take a quick commercial, and we'll be back.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we're back, and the telephone number, again, to call is 888-678-9597. That's 888-678-9597. You know, I do have a caller on the line now, but, you know, I feel a bit like a school teacher, you know, asking a question, and you look out, and it's the same kid that always has his hand up. And I've got Bob on the line from New York, and I'm going to take that call. But I'd like to get somebody else to call, too, because Bob's always got his hand up. Anyway, how you doing, Bob?
I even had my hand up in kindergarten, so
hello?
I never stopped. I asked too many questions.
Do I have Bob?
The establishment doesn't like it. I have a real important question to ask you. As a matter of fact,
well, Bob, you just came on the air, right? So I haven't heard anything you said.
Oh, can you hear me now?
I can.
Okay. I have a question that's been nagging and nagging at me since May, because in addition to many of the Europac stocks I have that are very conservative with good yields, which I'm not worried about at all, I'm concerned about something exemplified by an article written by Jay Taylor. You know who Jay Taylor is? MiningStocks.com newsletter. He, as a matter of fact, I wrote him, and I mentioned you in my email to him, and he wrote me back saying, quote unquote, Peter Schiff is the best. So Jay Taylor thinks very highly of you.
But I guess you can't improve from the best. So.
But this is what he says, because this is about my concern with regard to commodities as opposed to gold, which I don't consider a commodity. I consider gold a monetary metal. But here's what he says, and he's also talking about an article by Paul Van Eaton, who's a pretty bright guy.
I know Paul. Yeah, I know Paul.
Okay, here's what he writes. This is Jay talking now. Paul notes that much of the demand for raw materials does not represent net additional demand coming from China, but rather it represents substitution of manufacturing in the U.S. and elsewhere by Chinese manufacturers. He rightfully notes that the U.S. economy is much bigger than the Chinese economy, so the real demand is made in the USA and not China, and as such, much, if not most, of the surge in demand for commodities relates to the growth in the U.S. economy. Therefore, Paul believes, as I do, meaning Jay Taylor, and as do a growing number of people, that the U.S. economy is headed for the soup as the American consumer finally reaches his optimal selling point.
The U.S. economy is in trouble, but the world economy is not in trouble. You see, what happens is, yes, the demand right now is emanating from the U.S., but the supply is emanating from China or from Asia. Now, what's happening, I've explained this many, many times, supply is what creates demand, and it's not the other way around. Supply creates demand. And so what's happening is, because of the relative exchange rates between the U.S. dollar and the yuan, the supply that the Chinese are creating is coming here. But what will happen is when the U.S. economy goes down, and if the dollar collapses with it, which is my assumption. Now, if the dollar doesn't go down, then that observation would be correct. But if the dollar collapses, which is my contention that it will, then all of a sudden the demand will be recreated in the currencies that the dollar falls against. And so the Chinese will simply produce for domestic consumption as opposed to producing for exports, because right now their own people are too poor to afford the products, but that will change when the dollar collapses. Because the key is the supply side. But yes, a lot of things that used to be manufactured in China, in America, are now being manufactured in China. The next step is that, you know, right now the supply has moved to China. The next step is the demand will move to China. And so, first the Chinese stop, you know, we stop making and they make, but we still consume. The next phase is we stop consuming and they start consuming. And that's ultimately what's going to happen.
What about the supply in Latin America? There's a lot of resources coming out of Latin America.
Yeah, but wherever the resources are coming, it's the people who make the stuff that get to consume it. Right now, Americans are consuming what other people make.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to end. And that's what, whoever wrote that, if Paul Venn, there are so many people who are bright people that are making the same mistake. They think that American demand is the engine that drives the world economy. It's not. It's the caboose. The world needs our demand like they need a hole in the head.
Okay, well, what?
A lot of people just haven't been able to put that together, and that is a vital thing that people need to understand. It's like we're like little children, and Japan and China are like our parents. We need them. They don't need us. They're the breadwinners, not us. We're just consumers. And, you know, if you don't have children, you can think of plenty of things to spend your money on. You know, you don't have to spend it on your children if you didn't have them. So, you know, people are like, well, gee, if I didn't have a wife, if I didn't have a wife and I didn't have kids, I'd have nothing to spend my money on. Well, sure I would. I'd spend it on myself. I'd spend it on different things. I mean, a lot of us guys go without a lot of things that we would normally, we would like, but we can't afford it because we have to support a family. Now, we can make those choices, but there are things that we give up. But if we didn't have to support these other people, we would be able to indulge these other desires. That's the same thing, you know. If China wasn't supporting America, they can indulge their own desires and satisfy their own demand. Instead, those demands go unsatisfied because they're using their resources to satisfy ours.
Well, what you just said is exactly what I wrote to Jay Taylor, and he said he's going to respond in full in his newsletter, which comes out on Saturday. So I will email you a copy. I'll forward his email response.
What he'll need to do, really, if he doesn't appreciate it, is he can wait for my book to come out in March. There's a lot of this stuff in my book, and that is one of the key elements, one of the key points that I need to have come across.
Well, he was aware of the Forex aspect of what you're saying, although I don't think he's aware of the very, very novel concept, at least in my experience, which I would assume is Austrian economics, that supply creates demand, because most people think the opposite.
No, supply, that's one of the most, I forget who said it, but that's one of the, it's a famous economic quote that supply creates its own demand.
That's amazing.
That's key. I mean, look, let's put it this way. There's a lot of demand in some poor countries in Africa, but why isn't there stuff there to satisfy it? I mean,
I would argue there, if you read the book Confessions of an Economic Hitman, that their regimes are so corrupt, and our regime is so corrupt.
But because, look, just because there's demand doesn't mean there's going to be supply.
Right.
Right? Just because people want things doesn't mean they're going to be there.
Correct.
But the key is to have something. I mean, there are a lot of products that you don't even know that you want because they don't even exist. I mean, did you know you wanted a cell phone until there was a cell phone? I mean, you didn't even know what it was.
I didn't even know I wanted a woman until I knew there was a woman there.
But they have to be there. You know, supply, if once it's produced, then someone's going to want it, you know? And supply creates demand, not the other way around.
Excellent.
Not the other way around.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, bye.
Anyway, I got another call. We got the opposite coast. Joe is on the line from California. Go ahead, Joe.
Hello, Peter. Thank you so much for your show. I have a question regarding, what the individual investor can do to protect his wealth. You're recommending, and I'm pretty much agreeing that, having some good solid companies and based in, foreign currencies is a good way to go. But one thing concerns me, and I wanted to see what you thought. As the dollar depreciates, and these other investments go up in value and begin to produce, more money and dividends, once that money is converted back into dollars, one's going to also take a, you know, an increased hit on a tax-wise basis. But what worries me is that if the U.S. government changes some of the tax rules over the next few years, which they might have to do to increase, you know, revenues, that they might decide to make a two-tiered system where if your investments are based in a foreign-denominated currency, that they might tax you at a higher rate. And I wanted to...
Hey, look, they certainly might do that. There's one thing we know for sure is that the tax laws, and I put the laws in quotes because in many cases it's not really laws, but the government's going to change the rules. It's going to change them all the time. And so, therefore, I am just going to make my investments without regard to what the tax laws are because they're not going to be consistent. And, yeah, is it possible that in the future some of the stocks that we're buying, the government can impose a higher tax on those dividends? Sure. But I'm not going to not buy them because that might happen. I don't know what's going to happen. But I do know this, that the dividends are going to rise a lot in value. So even if the taxes go up, the after-tax dividends on your foreign stocks will still be a lot higher than the after-tax dividends would have been on your domestic stocks, even if the domestic stocks were taxed at a lower rate. So the key is to understand the biggest tax that we know we're all going to pay is inflation. And that's the one tax that you need to avoid more than the income tax. Now, ultimately, if the government imposes the confiscation tax, where the government basically requires all Americans to turn over their foreign assets for the benefit of the state, then you're screwed. Then it's not going to matter. Then what you should have done is you should have opened up a foreign account, and you should have actually transferred your money to the Cayman Islands or to Switzerland. I don't help people do that. So to the extent that the U.S. government wants to confiscate your assets outright, you know, my clients are screwed. But I'm going to hope that that doesn't happen.
Well, you know, you don't think that's going to happen.
I don't know. It might. But I'm not helping people prepare for that. There are people who are preparing for that, but they're just not doing it through me. I mean, I'm a domestic broker, and I help people invest in foreign securities, but through domestic onshore accounts. And, you know, and of course, the government confiscating assets would be an illegal act. But I wouldn't put it past our government, particularly during a crisis. I mean, we have a, in general, as far as governments go, I think we have one of the more corrupt governments. We probably don't have the most corrupt government in the world, but, you know, we're more corrupt than non-corrupt, and we have a propensity to violate individual liberties and property laws, even in peacetime, even under normal circumstances. But during emergencies or crises, you know, I mean, there's nobody has any rights in this country. And we have a history of that. And so who knows? I mean, I hope it doesn't happen because all my money is here. And so, you know, if they seize my money, I'll be just as broke as everybody else. But if they don't seize it, I'm in good shape because it's all foreign or it's all in gold or, you know, in commodities.
Right. Okay, well.
Are you a client of ours, Joe?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, I mean, so, yeah, I mean, these stocks that we're buying, I mean, right now, most of the stocks that we're buying enjoy the favorable dividend treatment. Now, I have found out that many stocks don't. I mean, nothing that we buy in Hong Kong, for example, gets the qualified dividend treatment. Nothing that we can buy in Singapore gets that treatment. Those two countries don't count. Now, if you buy a stock in mainland China, like in Shenzhen or Shanghai, you qualify for the 15% dividend. But if you buy in Hong Kong, you don't. It doesn't make any sense, but that's the rules. But most of what we're buying is paying qualified dividends. But, you know, not everything. But even the stuff that we're buying that doesn't pay qualified dividends, the dividends are still high enough that even at the higher tax, we're still getting a good return. And we don't want to avoid Singapore. I mean, it's one of the great countries to invest in. I don't want to not invest there simply because my dividends aren't qualified, especially since, you know, the whole thing could be gone. You know, there's a good chance that the Republicans are going to lose control of the House and the Senate in these midterm elections. And then there's a good chance that the Democrats will take the White House. And if we have a Democrat Congress and a Democrat president, do you think these lower taxes on dividends are going to hold up? Of course not. They'll be gone. They'll get rid of those the first day in Congress.
Right, but
increase the capital gains tax. So, I mean, all this stuff can change in a couple of years.
Right, but a trivial increase, you know, in dividend taxes would be one thing. But for the government to say that you know, your stocks that are, since they're, you know, they're based in a foreign currency, we're going to tax them, you know, 70% tax rate, you know, or go to a 75%, you know, tax basis on something like
that. Well, well, that still leaves you with 25%. And I guess 25% of something is better than 100% of nothing. But, yeah, it would be a bad deal, but I still would not own foreign stocks because that might happen.
Right. And you don't think the likelihood of that is being much of a likelihood.
I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. All I know is whatever happens, I'm going to be worse off with dollars than with anything else. You know, so I you could start figuring out all the different worst-case scenarios or best-case scenarios, but any scenario, you're better off with foreign assets, you know, with what we're doing. Now, is it possible that if the government confiscates it, then you're not better off? You're in the same boat. If the government says, okay, anybody with any foreign assets, turn them all over. Yeah, well, we're screwed. You know, that was our fault for being in America. But I don't, you know, I don't think, if I were to bet, I don't think it's going to come down to that. I don't think that the country is going to take that big a shift to totalitarianism or to, you know, it might. I mean, we've been on the road to serfdom for many, many years. Maybe we'll finally arrive at that destination, but I hope not.
Well, I hope not either.
But in the meantime, we got to make these investments because regardless of what happens, we're better off with these assets than domestic assets, just hands down.
Right. Thank
you. So, you know, I'm glad you're a client, and if you've got more cash, send it in. Let's do something with it before the dollar goes any lower.
Well, as soon as I can get more after all I pay in taxes, then I'll be sending it your way.
All right, great. Thanks for the call, Joe. Yeah, I've got another caller on the line from my old stomping ground in Orange County, California. It's Jeff. Go ahead, Jeff.
A question for you, Peter. I'm a client, man. I have an account, and I found out that you can keep your dividends in the currency that it's originally paid within the account.
Yeah, you can do that. I mean, we've always been able to. You just got to let us know, and we've got to tell Pershing to have your account coded to keep the currency. The only drawback of keeping the currency in that currency is, A, there's no interest that's going to get paid on it, and B, you know, if you really don't know what you're going to do with it, I mean, most of our clients accumulate dividends on various stocks, and then we go ahead and use those dividends. Once they reach, you know, a few $1,000, we buy something else. The thing is, if you have some stocks in Switzerland, some stocks in Japan, some stocks in Canada, you know, you're going to be getting little dividends in each currency. Ultimately, then, if you accumulate, you know, $4,000 or $5,000 worth of in six or seven currencies, and then you want to buy one more stock, now I got to take all those different currencies and convert them, you know, and so you're going to pay a conversion fee anyway, and you didn't get any interest during the time. Now, if the dollar had really depreciated during that time, then, you know, maybe you're a little better off. But if you've got Canadian dollars, let's say, and you want to buy something in Australia, I got to sell the Canadian dollars against the U.S. dollars, and then I got to buy the Australian dollars against the U.S. dollars because everything goes back to the U.S. dollar. So, you know, you're still making all these transactions. But, yeah, I mean, if you just want to, or if you have one big position and you really want to accumulate euros or Canadian dollars, we can do it. In fact, you can even take your sales proceeds. You can sell a stock and request payment in the foreign currency. You don't have to take U.S. dollars. So, you know, you can sell a stock. You can sell a stock and get euros. You know, and then if you needed the euros, we could actually wire the euros out to you. Yeah, all those options are there.
But I'm getting the feeling that you probably would not recommend this for the
division of. Look, it's a lot more complicated for us to have people collecting dividends in every different currency since we're so well diversified, and then to have to write all those sell tickets to move all those currencies back to another currency to enable you to buy a stock. It's so much easier to let them go to dollars and put in your money market, and they're all in that currency. And generally, you know, it's just a dividend, so I'm not that worried because, you know, and we're going to reinvest them. But there, if somebody just really doesn't want dollars and they want to accumulate these currencies and maybe they're going to use the cash in traveling, I mean, you could be someone that travels around a lot. And, you know, you might want us to be able to wire you a currency so you can have it, you know. You know, because it does cost money. I mean, you lose a little bit of money. When you own a stock that pays a euro dividend, converting it to the dollar costs you something. So if you take it, if you don't have to convert it, you can save that fee. It's small. it's about, you know, a 1/1500th of 1%. You know, so on $1,000, it's $15. But, you know, it's $15, you know. If you're going to need the euros anyway, then, you know, you can keep them there.
Does that ratio still hold on the other side as far as converting them back to dollars if you wanted to do
that? Yeah, there's always going to be a cost. Whenever you move from one currency to another currency, there's a trade involved. There's somebody else that's buying it from you, and who's buying it and reselling it. So there's always a little bit of a spread. But the spreads in the currency market are pretty narrow. They're a lot narrower than they used to be, and there's more liquidity there. So, you know, it's not a tremendous obstacle. You know, but the fewer currency transactions you make, obviously, the more money you keep.
So you probably would not recommend this generally for someone who just has a general account. For
no, it depends. Like, well, especially if a guy's got a $10,000 account, $20,000 account, they're getting these small dividends to have them in there in the local currency. No, I would just keep them in dollars, you know.
Okay. All right, thanks.
All right. Also makes it easier for tax-wise to be able to keep track of your gains and losses. When you have all these different currencies in your account, it's really more difficult to try to calculate what your profits are. Anyway, I don't know if Jeff is still on the line. But let me take another break. I have another caller on hold. We'll pick up that call as soon as the commercial is over.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that has passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we're back. It looks like we've got a caller on the line from Denmark. Is that true?
Faroe Islands.
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi, Peter. It's Leif here. I'm phoning from the Faroe Islands.
And where are they?
It's in between, well, you know where Iceland is, right?
Yes.
Yeah, well, if you take a line and you draw a line between Iceland and Norway, there's a group of 18 small islands in the North Sea. It's above Scotland and, you know, in between Iceland and Norway. And it's called the Faroe Islands. It's owned by Denmark.
Oh, well, what are you doing way up there?
Got married.
But how's the weather up there?
Yeah. No, it's like all over the place. You have snow, you have rain, fog, wind. It's a bit of everything up here. But it's not freezing because
what time is it up?
Got the Gulf Current.
What time is it?
Well, right now it's 1 in the morning, or like 1:30, something like that.
Is the sun still shining?
It was, though, in the summer, though.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. It's summer. Isn't it summer up there?
Yeah, it's summer. Well, like, we're past, like, the time where it's most light. Sometimes it was just light for 2 hours. Dark for 2 hours and light the rest of the day. If you'd be up at, like, 4 a.m, it's, like, daylight out.
Yeah, so are you listening on shortwave or on the Internet?
I listen on the Internet all the time, and I'm a huge fan of yours. I watch all your, you know, video clips and audio files, and I tell my friends to listen to, and, you know, really big fan. Right into, like, CNBC and tell them, like, way to go, you know, like, get Peter on again, please. So, anyways, I found out about you through, actually, Robert Kiyosaki, like, basically, Rich Dad. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
I think I've heard of it.
Yeah, anyways, he had this guy, Mike Maloney, on there, who was talking about silver. He's a money historian. And then he was recommending this program where it was, Jim Poplava.
Right, Financial Sense, yeah.
Yeah, and then they got your clip on there, and I just like, who is this guy? And then that's the way I found out about you. So anyways, I have a
question. You know, a number of people have found out about me from that interview I did on Poplava, and he ended up interviewing me based on that debate I had on CNBC with that economist, Diane Swonk, over what inflation was.
Yeah, she had no idea.
And she still has
that. That was really, really cool, man. Like we're like all laughing our heads off over here, like just like, you know, listening to that and like playing it back, and it's like, it's so cool. It's a way to go, man. That was really awesome.
Sure. So do you have a question or?
Yeah, I have a question. The thing is, I've been investing in like gold and silver, and the thing is that like it grows like dollar wise, but if I put it back into kroners, I've actually lost money because of the dollar falling.
Yeah, well, what that means is that the gold had not been rising versus the kroner. And, you know, you're in a situation where you don't have as much inflation risk as Americans because your base is the kroner. But sure, I think gold is going to rise in terms of all those currencies. And so ultimately, I think you're going to see pretty big gains in the kroner price of gold. No question about that. But I think that, you know, the Scandinavian currencies and European currencies are going to gain a lot of value relative to the dollar. So you're not going to see as big a gain in the price of gold when you price them in terms of other currencies as those people here in America would see when they're pricing it in dollars. But that's a positive for you, you know. That's not a negative. You're just not living in a country where the currency is about to fall off the edge of a cliff.
Yeah, that's right. But I had one other question for you.
Don't invest anything in America, though.
No, I'm not. I'm staying away from anything in America.
Next question.
You know. The other question was, I don't know if you've seen the movie that's come out, America, From Freedom to Fascism.
I haven't had a chance to see it yet, but I definitely want to. I mean, you know, one of the people in it is my dad, so.
Really?
Or Irwin Schiff.
Okay. Like, is this true about, like, the Federal Reserve is a private company? And, I mean, like...
Well, look, I haven't seen the movie, and I don't know all the stuff. I know there's a lot of things in there that are kind of exaggerated. But, yes, I mean, in the short answer to your question, the Federal Reserve was formed as a private corporation. It is not a government agency. It's easy to prove that if you ever get a letter from the Federal Reserve. There's a stamp on it. You know, if you get a letter from a government agency, there is no stamp. It's franked. The Federal Reserve pays taxes. It is private, but it is quasi-government. I mean, obviously, the people are appointed by the government. But the reason that it is private is because the federal government has no constitutional authority to do what the Federal Reserve is doing. So the only way it was able to be done was to put this function in private hands. But for all practical purposes, the Federal Reserve is not acting like a private company. It's acting like an arm of the Treasury. But I mean, the whole thing is unconstitutional, and it's, you know, but and there are a lot of problems to it. But I don't necessarily agree with a lot of the conspiratorial type theories that might be in that movie. Although a lot of the things in the movie, I'm sure, I would agree with. Certainly, a lot of the things with respect to the income tax. But anyway, I need to hop because I actually have three more calls on the line, and we only have 10 more minutes left.
Great. Okay, Peter, thanks.
Call any time. I'm glad to see that my voice is making it internationally.
Oh, yeah. I'm telling everyone I know about you, man.
All right, great. Thanks for the support. Keep it up.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, you know, now I've got another call from Hamburg, Germany. Steven, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Hey, guten Tag.
Hello, guten Tag. I'm actually a New Yorker. That's funny.
Why? What are you doing in Hamburg? In the military?
No, I'm actually. I had a child with a woman who was in L.A. at the time, and she's British, but was born in Hamburg. And then she lost her job because of the economy shift 5 years ago, and then we moved here to help raise my son.
Oh, well, I've been to Hamburg once in my life. You know, it was okay, I guess. That was probably about 12 years ago I was there. Anyway, what's your question or your comment?
Yeah, well, it's so coincidental. Some of the else just called in from Denmark and mentioned Robert Kiyosaki. On Kiyosaki's site about 6 months ago, he mentioned that a recession would start once we had an inverted yield curve. And I'm just wondering, I saw something on another article saying we are now in an inverted yield curve. And
we've had an inverted yield curve off and on for a while, but right now you've got the Fed funds rate at 5.25 and the 30-year bond rate at 4.9. The 10-year is at like 4.75. So, yes, we have an inverted yield curve. It's not steeply inverted. It's actually almost flat, but it just gradually inverts. But we're headed for a recession. It has nothing to do with the yield curve. Now, maybe the yield curve reflects that fact. I think the yield curve more reflects the fact that people buying a long bond are a bunch of idiots. They have no clue
right.
how bad inflation really is. Maybe a lot of the people buying the long bond are foreign governments who are buying for political reasons and really don't care how much money they lose. But you know, I think the bond market's going to get killed. I think the yield curve is going to uninvert. I think it's going to get very steep. I think long-term rates are going to go through the roof, and the Fed is going to keep trying to artificially hold down short-term rates.
Right.
And you know, and this is going to happen. I mean, you know, I wrote about the fact that when the Fed finally paused, that there would be one last move up in the bond market, and then it would get killed. And we're right now in the move-up phase, and I think very shortly bond prices are going to begin to collapse, and interest rates are going to rise on the long end. And that's going to mean we're not going to have a recession. We're going to have a recession. It's going to be a doozy.
Oh, right. Yeah, I'm definitely seeing all the signs coming up with everything you're talking about on all the news headlines that
yeah.
paying attention.
Anyway, I don't want to cut you short, but I got two people on hold, and I got 7 minutes left.
Well, I appreciate your work out there. Thank you very much. I plan on I'm trying to help my mother become a client of yours out there.
You know, we have accounts all around the world. I mean, so you can do business with us from Germany even if you weren't an American. You know,
yeah, sure.
Anywhere you are in the world, you want to invest, you know, certainly we won't invest your money in the United States, but some people
exactly.
live in one country. People live in Germany, for example. They might find that their local broker in Germany has a problem investing in Hong Kong. Or Japan, or India, or New Zealand. You know, people, just like in America, people have problems investing abroad. People have problems investing abroad in other countries. And so what we can do is we can help you access markets all around the world. And there's no reason to limit your investments to just those companies that happen to be trading on exchanges where you live.
Right.
It's good to broaden your horizons and to have exposure to other markets. Anyway, thanks for the call, Steve, and look forward to working with you or anybody you refer our way. Okay, we got two callers on hold from Hawaii. So let's take the first one. Let's take no more calls if you're listening. I mean, we only got 5 minutes and there's two calls left. So the two people calling from Hawaii, the first one is Jay. Go ahead, Jay.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
We've talked before and my I'm a client and I got to turn down the volume on the computer here.
Yeah, turn that down. It's a delay. I can hear myself talking.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, you still have the same feelings about long-term oil, right?
Oil prices are headed higher, yes, particularly
yeah.
in terms of dollars. I actually think oil prices are headed lower in Chinese yuan. In terms of U.S. dollars, they're headed a lot higher.
I didn't quite understand that.
I said in terms of other currencies, like the yuan and China,
right.
I think oil prices might actually be going down from here.
Oh, okay.
The U.S. dollars, they're up.
Oh, okay. All right. Because some people, you know, you've heard it 100 times, $100 oil, $200, whatever.
Oh, yeah, it's going there. It's going there. But the question is, what will the dollar be worth when it gets there?
Right.
And the dollar's going down. I think oil prices are gonna settle down. My guess is $150 to $200 a barrel for the top, somewhere up there.
Okay.
But what will oil be in terms of the yuan when that happens? Well, obviously, if the yuan hasn't been floated, if it's still pegged to the dollar, then you know, the Chinese are going to be paying the higher prices. But I don't think that's going to be the case. I think they're going to let the peg go.
Yeah, well, some idiot was on CNBC yesterday talking about $50 oil by next year. So
yeah, well, it's just, you know, it's not some idiots. There's a lot of idiots on there. They're every guest.
Well, that's my only...
I mean, they're not necessarily idiots. I just don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, right.
every once in a while there's somebody on there. You know, I heard a guy the other day who's coincidentally his name happened to be Peter. I was in my car, so I don't know what the guy looked like, but I heard him talking. The guy was, you know, I didn't disagree with anything. So, you know, there are some other people that come on that show that know what they're talking about. They're just not, you know, as a percentage-wise, it's a small amount, but they're there.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, thanks, Peter. That's all I had.
All right, Jay. Well, thanks for the call. Are you a client?
Yes. Yeah, I'm working with Chris.
All right, great. Nice talk to clients. Keep the money coming and send us some referrals.
You got it.
And we got the last caller on hold, also from Hawaii, David. Aloha.
Aloha, Peter.
How are you?
Just wonderful. I was just wondering, I don't really understand this relationship with the falling dollar and then the devaluation of dollar in relation to the other currencies. Wouldn't they fall also, or what?
Well, look, all currencies, you know, there's that famous quote that currencies don't float, they sink at different levels.
Uh-huh.
And the way you would look at what's happening to currencies in general would be to price them versus gold. And certainly it's possible and likely that because of inflation, because all these fiat currencies are being created at a faster pace than gold is being mined, that all these currencies, whether they're euros or Swiss francs or, you know, Singapore dollars or Canadian dollars, that they will all lose value over time relative to real money, which is gold.
Right.
That there will always be a positive inflation, meaning prices will be rising in other countries. But currencies can be debased at different rates, and it's possible that while all currencies are falling, that some currencies can be falling more rapidly. And so it creates the appearance that some currencies are rising.
Okay.
And really what's happening is they're falling more slowly than others. But it's like, you know, it's like relativity, you know, I mean, you know, and that's where currencies are. You know, one body is moving at 50 miles an hour and one is moving at 30 miles an hour. It looks like, you know, same as one standing still and one is going 20.
Okay.
We're debasing our money more rapidly, and there are reasons for that. So the dollar is going to lose a lot of value versus these other currencies. So it makes sense, if you're going to own currencies, to own non-dollars. And especially since we get so much better valuations in foreign markets and much better dividend yields, it's a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer.
Okay. How about the mining stocks in relation to the gold stocks? Are they?
Well, the mining stocks are going to do well with a rising gold price. I mean, recently, you know, gold prices haven't risen as fast as the cost of mining, so a lot of gold companies haven't had big profits. That's all going to change. Anyway, I got about 30 seconds left, so I got to let you go. But feel free to call again next week.
Bye.
Thanks for the call, Dave.
Hi.
Anyway, that's it. We're running out of time. It's been a quick hour, especially once those phone calls started coming. We got two from Europe. That's very interesting. Anyway, I'll be here again next week at the same time. Don't forget to visit the website, www.europac.net. Call the office toll-free, 800-727-7922. 800-727-7922. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I'll talk to you again next week.